what will your answer be? Will you run for the door? Will you run out on me like it's hard? It's no holds barred.
No holds barred.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Rogue Opinions, and welcome to No Rogues Barred, the show that I do every so often so I can have a show of my own where I choose people I want to speak to so I can pry into their lives and find out things I didn't know about them. And it's also a show where I change the description of the show literally every time I do an episode because I do it so infrequently. And this man, it's fair to say, it has been literal months in the making getting him on this show. But the stars have aligned because this man has a film coming out that he's here, he wants to talk about, and we are definitely going to get into that in some depth. But there's other things we need to get into. We want to get into the mind that lies behind that giant forehead of his. He's a man I know very, very well. He is the one and only Mr. David Campbell. Hello, David.
Scott, it's good to be here. You're right, we have managed to get the stars aligned here to come on. I'm very excited to chat to you today. Let's get into it.
Let's definitely get into it. I mean, you've been on here before. It was months and, well, even I say a couple of years ago, actually, at this point. We did an episode about Armageddon 1999. I don't know whether or not to apologise for that, because I don't remember much about it. We're going to get into the film in a little bit, but I talk about you a little bit and how we know each other. And it's mainly through Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat. And I've had multiple Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat alum on this show. Most recent one I had was Andy Mitchell, star of Screen and Screen. who you know as well as part of this film. But talk to me, like, of your memories of the Glasgow Uni Pro Wrestling Society, because I believe somebody made the mistake of giving you the login details for that tour.
Well, here's the thing with it. I was never a member of the Glasgow Uni Pro Wrestling Society. That is a common misconception. I got access to their Twitter. Basically, what happened was me and Andy had already decided we're going to make the movie, which at that point was called Andy Mitchell Wants to Be a Wrestler. So then he said, I'm part of the Wrestler Society. And I said, oh, there might be connections we can use within that. So I decided to go along to like one meeting, meet some folk. I can't remember who was actually there. I think Nathan Fisher had probably left at that point. So I never got to meet him. But when I joined the podcast, all of a sudden I had access to the Twitter, because I was like, hey, I can do some tweeting from this, Andy, boost the society's, you know, reach a wee bit here if I'm live tweeting pay-per-views and stuff. And that is not what that Twitter account became. I ended up using it for my own personal grudges and vendettas, which was phenomenal, because, you know, I got to troll members of the Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat podcast with it. It was phenomenal.
Oh, Jesus. Don't you know how much we can get into your various vendettas over the years? If your vendettas and grudges were people, you could have filled half of Wembley Stadium most recently, like an All In.
Yeah, I would have challenged that attendance record, that's for sure.
That's mainly how I knew you, because when I started getting into like Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat, being a part of that, you were out of the country. So most I knew about you was you were the guy who mainly communicated via that Glasgow Uni Pro Wrestling Society Twitter account.
Yeah, I joined the podcast. It was 2018. And again, it was to do with the movie. Andy was like, oh, like, I'm doing this wrestling podcast. I can maybe see if they could help us with the movie and anything. And then that spiraled into me attending, doing an episode. And it was hosted. It was Stephen Louch was hosting at the time. So that's how long ago it was. Very early stages of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat. So then I did a couple of shows and it was great. And then, like you say, I went to Boston for about 4 months. So I wasn't doing any podcasts, because it wasn't like, kids, you know, you might think all podcasts are recorded remotely, you know, nowadays. But before COVID hit, you know, some people would try and do them in person quite a bit, you know. Uh-huh. Stephen was very much into that. We had that. I actually got to debut at the Strathclyde studio, Scott. You know, that's how old school I was. And then eventually we moved to the Glasgow Cali studio for a long time, which I'm sitting in my flat now and I've closed the windows so there's no like noise coming in. It is warm. It's still nowhere near as warm as that studio got in Cali. My God. Oh. It was like a sauna. Like it was like the worst sauna in the world because you'd be warm, but you'd have Hockney shouting at you about the Undisputed Era. You know what I mean? Like it was something out of a nightmare. You know?
It was the worst sauna in the world. You weren't even allowed to take your clothes off. I got multiple complaints about that from both the podcast members and the university itself.
Yeah, because you had the window. It was so weird because people could look in because you had the window out to like the dining hall. Like from the studio, it was bizarre. It was a great setup, a lot of good memories recording in that studio. But when you really break it down, it was strange, just people peering in.
What I love about that, the wall on the other side of the window, there are like three booths along the way. The one that would mean that you could look directly into the window. Thankfully, we had no one ever really properly sitting at that window or that booth as we were recording, because they would look down and they probably could have heard us just from there. Because especially if it was a debating episode, because opinions flew hot. And that's probably why we got as hot as it fucking did, because opinions were flying all over the place in that studio.
Yeah, and I do, listen, part of me, because I do it now in my podcast, we've tried to do a couple in person, and there's one brand of it that we do in person completely, because I do miss that era of ESSR, but I think it's one of the things where the pandemic hit, and this applies to work and stuff like that, you realise how much you can actually do remotely, and people sort of not valued their time more, but also people, that was 5 years ago, you know what I mean? People's lives have changed. Like, Stephen is now married, you know what I mean? Like, you know, your brother Ross is engaged. People's lives have changed, like, so much since the start of Eat Sleep Superlix retweet. And while I do miss those studio days, I think it's the sort of, it was natural evolution, you know, to move more into sort of remote with it.
I know. It does feel weird to think that we tried to, for a while, do it live. You know, fuck it, we'll do it live. I think I did two of those shows live from the Cali studio, the old Strathclyde studio, and as soon as we moved to Cali, we're back to be through the pre-record, and we saw it the next day, which I think is for the best, because I hated every sentence I said on the live ones. I was always censoring myself because I was trying not to swear because I didn't know what we could get away with, given that we were going out live.
See, I love, like, and I remember one of my many retirements, for those that don't know, I leave Eat Sleep Lakes, I leave ESSR habitually, you know, so we have it awake. But one of the things I came back was to do a live show on YouTube. It was the Conspiracy Theory, and I must have done like 6 or 7 episodes, but I do love the live aspect of things. Like in school, I did like school show and love singing and stuff like that. There's something about doing stuff live that, and events and like one-time things that really gets me going and makes you perform, I think, and helps you rise to the occasion, you know. So like, listen, if a live show was ever done again on ESSR, that might get me back out of retirement for like the 17th time. You can text Stephen Wilson, let him know that one.
we have effectively nicknamed you the Terry Funk of wrestling podcasting.
Why am I dead?
No, mainly on the retirement aspect of it.
I'm getting on, of course. Like, yeah, the thing is, like, we're going to get into like all the other, you know, things I do. And while I love ESSR, and it's always a place that wrestling is one of my passions, you know what I mean? You could not do that podcast with all those personalities with varying opinions and not care deeply about wrestling, because everyone else does and you get eaten alive, you know what I mean? If you were coming in there sort of aloof about it, like, yeah, I'm a wee bit of a fan, no. But the reason that I come and I go so much, and sometimes I have time to do it and sometimes I have no time, is just because, like, part of my personality is I can't sit still. Like, I have a problem, like, resting. Like, see if it's a day of doing nothing, like, I need to like plan it out and like tell myself, this is the day that you need to rest, this is the day you need to do nothing, because otherwise if it's just sort of sprung upon me, like, I don't know what to do with myself, you know what I mean? I'm fidgeting, or like, oh, I'll start a script, like, oh, buy paints, I'll start a fucking painting, you know what I mean? Like, I'm always just wanting to keep myself busy, but I've learned that I also need to balance that, because as soon as you take on too much and you get burnout, that's one of the worst feelings in the world. I would not recommend it.
No, definitely not. So you make kind of your introductions to the ESSR cricket through like Andy Mitchell, as you said.
Yeah.
So How did you find kind of, I'm trying to find the words here, kind of assimilating into the group, you know, kind of, how did you feel like you found it? Did it take you a while to kind of properly feel comfortable around the group, and was there people that you kind of clicked with immediately?
It kind of does, and it was weird because I can't really put my finger on it. A group chat's always a great thing, and I found my footing through the group chat because I didn't meet, I think, Gary Kernahan, right, for like probably about a year after I joined the podcast, like in person, you know, that way because I had the Boston run. But Ross, your brother, always for the ASSR team, does these sweepstakes for the pay-per-views, you know what I mean? And there's a bit of back and forth in the chat about always winning the sweep, who's going to be the champion and all that. So I had a lot of fun with that and got to embrace my sort of like natural wrestling heel that comes out whenever I play anything competitive in life. Sports, games, you name it, that is the role I just sort of take on. So I think that did help, that there was a form of competition that I could sort of, you know, have a bit of a joke with. And that really helped me sort of simulate, because me and you have always gotten along well. Ross is like constantly sending bloody, what are they called, reels, Instagram reels back and forth, you know what I mean? And of course, Gary Kernahan, my sweet, sweet Gary. It's just, it's, will be my ex-lover one day. We just need to make it happen. But obviously, a lot of great friendships formed through that podcast.
No, definitely. I mean, I don't think I met you till, I don't even think I met you till early 2019, maybe even the first time, but I felt like I knew you by the time you came back because of the group chat and things like that.
You must have met me the first time, and I and someone can go and check the tape on this. Royal Rumble Quiz 2019, I think, was the first time we met in person.
Must have been. I was more excited to meet you than to do the fucking quiz, if I'm honest.
I appreciate that.
Not my finest hour, because I fucked up royally in the last two questions and had a Monica reaction when she finds out that she's fucked the quiz and she's... they can't remember it. Like when they can't remember, Canada's job and they've lost the apartment. Like, no!
Listen, there's a man who's lost many quizzes in his time, both in front of people and in front of no one. It's listen, it never gets easier, you know?
But talk to me a little bit about your wrestling kind of interest and where that gets spawned from, because you, like myself, are a child of the Ruthless Aggression era, and I know you are fond of a certain female legend who's been a big part of the current product as of late.
Yeah, well, Trish Stratus is my favourite wrestler of all time, and I think, you know, see when you're a wee guy and you say your favourite wrestler's a woman, you know what I mean? Like, just people didn't do it. But as the years have went by, I feel so much more comfortable saying that, because we talk about this persona that I adopt when anything competitive is laid out in front of me. It is basically heel Trish Stratus. That is who I model my entire fucking, you know, being around at times. And I think she's brilliant. But I started watching wrestling, like I said, I've told this story in the SSR before. It's 2006 and my family didn't have Sky, so my granddad would record on videotapes, you know what I mean, and send it. And I remember the first pay-per-view he ever recorded for me was Unforgiven 2006, and I specifically asked him to record that one because I knew it was Trish's retirement. So, and listen, that show had Hell in a Cell, it had a TLC match, you know what I mean, had a lot going through it. It was a really good show in Toronto, but that was the one thing I had to see. It was like, I need to see Trish Stratus's retirement match, you know, because she was my favourite at the time. And that feud with her and Mickey, the match with her and Mickey at Mania, I was just like so bought into that. Like, what a feud, you know what I mean? It's one of your first feuds to see in wrestling. I was like, oh, unbelievable.
I think that may have been one of the last pay-per-views I've watched before I took a little break from watching wrestling.
Yeah.
Not because I was disinterested, like most people say that they were. Like, I just forgot to watch it one day, and I was that. My attention span was so short that day. If I forgot to watch something one day, I probably didn't watch it for a while.
Yeah, but you fall out of stuff when you're a kid, don't you? Like, you go through phases of stuff. Like, I remember, like, Power Rangers was a show I was really fond of when I was wee. But part of the reason for that was I watched it at my gran's and videotape, and then I got a few videos after that. But, like, when things move time slots, you just sort of lose touch with them. Digimon, I loved that. But then they stopped showing the first two seasons and I wasn't interested in what was happening after, really, you know what I mean? So it was like, but it's the same thing with wrestling. You have like bits where you're like into it, you have the means to watch it, but like my granddad stopped recording the videos at one point because it like something changed with his telly or whatnot. So my exposure to wrestling probably at a certain point came from checking what was happening on WWE.com. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. So I remember I just didn't watch it, and then one Saturday I turned on SmackDown on a Saturday, and it was like late 2009, just Jericho and Kane were in the ring. Jan, I think it was before Bragging Rights 2009. And yeah. My first question was, well, I had two questions. One, when the fuck did Chris Jericho come back? Because last I saw him, he was getting dragged out of the building after losing to John Cena in 2005. And two, yeah. What the fuck happened to Chris Jericho's hair?
He just chopped it all off one day. But I loved that era of wrestling that I came into. The characters, like, people talk about the Attitude Era, but for me, the stars were still around that time. Those are the ones I look back most fondly on. You know, like your Cena's and Triple H really coming into his prime, like the second coming of Shawn Michaels, Rob Van Dam, you know, it was fantastic stuff. You know, I still look back fondly on some of those events.
Was this you? I'm pretty sure I heard a story that some of the guys were sharing like stories about wrestling on one of the old ESSR shows I wasn't on. For some reason, I think, is this story David Campbell? Was it you that mentioned like somebody walking in while watching the episode of Raw with the live sex celebration? Was that someone else?
That was me. That was my granddad recorded that. Yeah, the live sex celebration. He was like, oh God, like, he wasn't quite sure about it. Obviously, one of the most iconic segments of Edge's career, and Edge is someone who still love to this day. We're about a year on from Clash in the Castle, which was in Wales, first WWE stadium event for decades. And my favourite part of that event, like, was just Edge's entrance, like getting to see Edge like live in person, like this babyface after his big comeback, was so good. But you go back to when I started watching, and I hated no one more than that man. Like, he was such a fucking dick, and you loved it. You absolutely loved it. Like, when you look back on Edge, and I think our generation who have fallen away from wrestling, like, you could say one name that will get a reaction out of people, it'll be Edge, because you look back now, you realise how good he actually was and how much you love to hate him, you know? So I think there's the real fondness there for Edge. Not my granddad, God rest his soul, you know, he wasn't too impressed by it. But
no, it goes back to, like, there's that meme, like, when I was playing wrestling, when I was on my own, it's a loading screen for the SmackDown games, like The Rock. When my mum walked in, it's a loading screen of Trish Stratus. That's pretty much it. Yeah, I agree with you on the Edge thing. Like, two people I hated most when I was watching my first go around, it was Edge and Triple H.
Yeah,
because they were just so good at what they did. The thing with Edge was, like, Edge got turned heel because of the breaking up the real life relationship of Lita and Matt Hardy. I was more pissed off that he broke up the kayfabe relationship between Kane and Lita, because also Kane was my guy.
That was your guy. No, I remember, like, because Edge was having his first sort of main event run when I came in as well. So for me, he's always been a top guy. You know, he's always been a bit like the top heel in the company, probably, around that time. And I have the distinct memory of when he wasn't even the cash-in against Cena, it was the cash-in against Taker. That really got my blood up when I was wee. Oh, I hated him for that. I was like, oh, you bastard.
You know, you have those like wrestling moments that don't age well. Like, I never watched Mania 21 when it happened, but I watched it months later because my cousin got the DVD of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because I'm old enough to remember when you had to wait for a DVD to come out.
Yeah.
But I watched it, and I knew, every time I watched it, I knew Edge won the Money in the Bank, but I still got annoyed about it. And the only thing was like, oh, how dare you? You cost that plucky Chris Benoit the belt, because it was Benoit was the guy you knocked off the ladder, and this was 2005. I didn't know any better.
God,
like, oh, why could it not have been Chris Benoit? Like, thank fucking God for history's sake, it wasn't Chris Benoit.
Yeah, I know. Didn't need more than that. I think wrestling fans have a weird thing with Benoit as well. Like, there's still a contingent out there who wants him in the Hall of Fame and stuff like that. And I'm just like, let it fucking go. You know what I mean? Like, no one likes a serial killer this much. Like, let it go.
I know. I mean, I remember like 07, 08, I wasn't watching, but I still even heard about the bloody Chris Benoit thing. That's how much of a big of a deal it was.
Yeah.
At the time.
In the papers, it was on like the actual news, you know, it was a huge thing, especially for like kids our age, because then, you know, your parents would sort of be like, oh, should you be watching this? Like, this sort of guy who's in it, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, it was a big sort of affecting thing, I think.
But, you know, we can talk about wrestling. We'll circle back to ESSR because the stuff with our new and me that I want to talk about. But yeah. I should mention, going back to Trish, like one of your several retirements, I think you mainly came out of one of them because there was a chance to host a show about the careers and rivalry of Trish Stratus and Lita. And all of a sudden, there's you back again. Like, right, no one, I was born to do this show.
Yeah, I still get annoyed about that show to a degree because it was where Stephen, for some reason, like was like, oh, we need to pair them together. And I think that's not a big misstep, you know what I mean? But I just think that's a big wasted opportunity in ESSR that there wasn't a separate Trish and Lita show. Maybe you could do it now. Both have had new things happen, Scott. Maybe that's something, mm-hmm. you know, to appeal, you know, a new profile on Trish and a new profile on Lita, especially with what they've done since. But it was fun to come back and host that show because I can take or leave Lita, so half the show is probably really good, you know what I mean? But
I've been watching a fair bit of Lita from like our peak, like in 2000 onward, because we do a retro like SmackDown show over here on Rogue Pines that I host. And I remember watching and I'm like, well, I've criticised Lita's moonsault now, but then I watched this stuff back like, Jesus, it was touch and go when you could still do it. Never mind multiple injuries and years of inactivity.
I know, nothing against her. I just think, you know, those are, when people think of women's wrestling, Trish and Lita is probably two of the names that come to you know, non-fat fans' lips, you know what I mean? So happy to have done that. A big advocate for Trish and Lita, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your other passion, Dave, and that's obviously filmmaking.
Yeah.
And where this kind of, where this first kind of sprout out, because we all love films. Just saying you like films is like saying you like eating. So,
yeah.
But where can you pinpoint the point in your life where you're like, maybe you're watching a particular film where you say to like, I could do that, like, or you wanted to be involved in the film industry?
It took years to sort of like figure that out, no matter how obvious it would be. Like when I was young, I loved like storytelling and stuff, and me and my pal would come up with our own ideas for like, you know, Dark Knight sequels and X-Men movies and stuff like that, you know. So it's always been something I was into over the years, but it got to a point in my life because at school, like I was fucking flying in terms of grades and stuff like that. So people were like, you should go and do a law degree. So I never really got a chance to figure out for myself what it would be that I did. And it turns out that that was the single worst period of my life. Like it came into, like, in terms of mental health, that was, I've been pretty open about this in the past. It was really a really troubling time for me at that point. So it ended with me leaving that degree and going to, you know, just get a job, get some work and see what I wanted to do next. And I was trying to figure it out because when you're in that place, you can't see the wood through the trees sometimes. And I remember the movie I stuck on to watch for the first time. It was Kill Bill, stuck on. And I just remember as soon as David Carradine's character Bill says, does she know her daughter is still alive? Like the pop and the energy I just got from it. And watching that movie, to see someone who felt so in control of what they were doing, and you know, it's a non-linear narrative that excited me, and there's like an anime sequence halfway through it, and the creativity that was on show. I remember finishing that movie and just knowing that that's what I wanted to do, and I bought a screenwriting course the next day. I started writing my first feature script, which obviously was not very good. But you know, the first time you do anything is not very good. And in fact, you can go and listen to that. We did during COVID on First Time Films, as it was back then, a table read of that first script. I believe it was The Murder of Tracy Roth, it was called, and it was funny to perform it just because of how bad it was. But that is where the passion went from then, and I didn't really look back from that point.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Like your first time might not be the greatest. Like I did a media course where I had to make short films, and I did like 3 years of that. And 3 years later, I thought for my podcast, I thought, oh well, let's, because my friend Paul was on that course as well, at least for the first year. I'm like, let's watch back these films and talk about them on the show. And I regretted that decision almost instantly because I was in a lot of them and I had to watch that back. And there was one where like the entire class got involved in making. And you can fucking tell because it's a prime example of too many cooks. It was made, the script, it was chosen by the best script, like some guy also named Scott, like how the script got picked. The film was based in Miami. We filmed it in Clyde Bank in November.
So, it's tough. That's a tough sub right there. That's tough to replicate.
Yeah, like, if you imagine Miami just been through some horrible nuclear war, then maybe you could believe it took place there. Otherwise,
it's not going to work. But there's nothing better. There's nothing better than creating stuff like that. Like, and to me, writing is my first love. Like, after this, I'll do some writing tonight before I go to bed, and that's what I love doing, because that's just the creative part of it. You know, that's not inhibited by money or like having availability to shoot and equipment and all that jazz. Like, when you sit down and just do a piece of writing, of course it has its own challenges. Of course there's moments where you get writer's block, but nothing I love more than firing up the computer and penning a script.
And so, you know, you keep at it with the like filmmaker thing, and then obviously the idea comes initially, which is going to be Andy Mitchell wants to be a pro wrestler. And if you want the opposite side of this, the yin to David Yang here, go listen to the Andy Mitchell episode and hear his side of things. This is really probably the reason I'll get Andy on first, get his side, and then hear David completely disprove anything, try and disprove anything Andy says. But talk to me about kind of the process of that coming together, you know, combining also your love of filmmaking also with wrestling, another thing we know that you're into. And why Andy Mitchell was the subject of this, what was going to be a mockumentary about him being a wrestler?
Yeah, it was just the unlucky man in the right place at the right time. Basically, a couple of us at uni got together to make a short film, and me and Andy were editing it together. I directed it. And when you're in the edit suite, it's the first time I ever edited anything. So we're just like trying to piece this together. And he just turns to me innocuously and he's like, "Ah, I'd love to do some wrestling training. I might go to a class at whatever it was at the time, like the ICW feeder training, I forget the name of it."
The Asylum's got a longer name, but I think it's mainly just called The Asylum.
Yeah, well, he's a good train at The Asylum, and I just got really excited about it because I had the buzz. Like, that was the first time I've really directed anything. And I said, "We should film you doing that. You know, we should make it into a documentary." And then as the sugar was more ingested, all of a sudden this became not a documentary, but a mockumentary where he's the only one playing himself. And we're going to have like a fictional camera crew around him following it. And I was going to write the script. And we had a round table come out today, and Rob Jane, who was a member of the crew, who was like a fucking life support to me at times. He was there basically every shoot. Said to me, like, we just sorted this like over pints, and all of a sudden people got roped into it. But the reason that Andy was the man, to answer your question, is because Andy actually wanted to be a wrestler. He wanted to try it. And that was all through the project and in all of its iterations. That's the thing that I held on to. Like, that's the way into the movie, and that's basically the story. Whether it's the original title, Andy Mitchell Wants to Be a Wrestler, or it's 10 Reasons Not to Make a Movie, it's about that. It's about that first conversation. And listen, there was a lot that came out of it, good and bad. You know, some of the best laughs I've ever had, and some sleepless nights thinking I've put far too much effort into this. Like, but it was all worth it because we had one statement that stemmed so much creativity in so many years of people's lives. Like, regardless of like whatever happened on there, it's remarkable when you actually think about it that way, when you see its humble origins.
Everyone talks about fucking Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, you know, attaching himself to planes, diving off of fucking cliffs on motorbikes. Like, Andy Mitchell did all his stunts. He actually did the training. So when you see him take a bump, that's him taking a bump.
Yeah, and the bumps in that match weren't even, because we kept the bumps limited in what you see in the movie. And obviously it was wrestling Strack, who also does ESSR, so Strack wrestled before, so was able to sort of protect Andy a bit. But he took much worse bumps at the Asylum. Like, I remember we'd be filming or coming at uni, and he'd just take his top up, and you see the bruises on his back from just running the ropes. You know what I mean? I don't think people realise how physically demanding it can be. And listen, Andy wasn't an actor, and to be fair, I mean, knew what he was getting into. He signed up to do a feature film for no money, you know what I mean? But one thing that I always say about Andy is he put his body in the line, you know, even doing the training, and all through the production, he stuck with it. So, you know, in the end, he was definitely the right man for the job, because he proved to be a reliable sort of part of it. And he, at the end of the day, he got what he wanted. He got to have a wrestling match, you know what I mean?
and, you know, to again show how long this has been in terms of, like, the labour and putting this all together and what it was before and what it became. Like, I'm not too on because I do fuck all, really, other than sit there, but I'm in the film that David is talking, referring to. I play wrestling fan number 3 or 4, whatever the fuck it is, because me, Ross, my brother, and a bunch of other people from ASR and some other people all basically were asked to come along this small, basically, no bigger than a fucking garage. Like, it's like the wrestling tent training school where there was a ring where you guys filmed the wrestling scene, and we were basically just extras there, but we filmed that, and, like, I remember being in that in, like, 2019, so, like, pre-pandemic, we filmed that part of it, and then like, there's that photo that comes up my memories every so often of, like, just everyone in the ring and someone up above, like, just taking a photo of everybody there.
Yeah, it was Rob Mills took the picture, I think. It must have been the wrestler. But that was such a great day. Like, that was, listen, I shelled out for food that day. It was the most professional day we ever had, you know, because we had extras, we had as many crew as I could rope into it that day as well. And it was just so much fun, because that was what the essence of the movie was about. It was, again, it was revolved around this dream of a guy being a wrestler, you know, and it had that homemade feel to it, like the T-shirt spray painted with his name on it, you know what I mean? A referee, Matt, who had his T-shirt again, spray-painted the ref lines on it, you know? And it all had such a good vibe to it, because the ASR crowd were in the right, like, in the crowd who, you know, loved wrestling, so they were naturally into it. My grandpapa were there, not having a fucking clue what was going on. And a lot of the cast and crew who had been going through this for years with, you know what I mean? Like, when I look back in it, and there's a reason that that's the natural end to the movie, is because that's the end of the story. You know what I mean? That's what the natural end point is from Andy Mitchell, just uttering the words, "I'd like to try that" one time in an editing session, you know? So I always do get emotional, and I'm very fond of that day just because of that.
So my memories, I know Ross mainly remembers the food, because he was impressed by the number of sausage rolls he was able to wolf down on that day.
Yeah,
I remember that. I remember
nearly.
I remember wanting to punch one of your extras in the face because he interrupted a conversation between me, Ross, and a couple of other people. Andy was a bit weird, and then I also remember a bunch of us getting in the ring between takes, with me being quite proud of myself how I managed to get in the ring, and then there was a crash mat there for one of the shots, and Andy Mitchell went, "Who wants to take a body slam?" And before I could say no, I realised, why is everything upside down? Why is my phone flying past my head? As a fucker picks me up and slams me. And then Alan just decides to dive onto me and the crash bat and just pin me on against my own will.
Lord above. I know. Well, it's letting listen. There was such a good vibe about that day. And obviously we couldn't make the movie we originally set out to make, but Rob made a good point. We're talking about this the other night. I honestly think the version of the movie now that you will see in Amazon Prime on the 15th of this month is a better film than we got, because the story of the movie, even though it's heavily exaggerated, the stuff we put in the interviews and stuff like that, it captures more of a feeling and probably says more and does more than the original script would have. You know, so even though we got some really good stuff, the wrestling sort of good days, like this version of it, the sort of behind the scenes look at it, I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people, because we're talking about that day just now. Like, we have the actors telling exaggerated versions of the story of that day on set, you know what I mean, as well. So it's good. It is good to have those stories in the film.
Yeah, and obviously there was a lot of trails that made it. That took it from Andy Mitchell wants to be a wrestler to now 10 reasons not to make a movie. Yeah. And I think more than a year ago at this point, you held a screening somewhere in Glasgow. A bunch of us all came See, Andy couldn't watch himself for the full time, so he buggered off halfway through.
Yeah.
Which I then turned into a joke on a later show that I hosted. Andy was on. I went, a man whose acting performance was so bad he couldn't even watch it himself. Or he walked out of his own premiere or something like that. And then you held the screen for it. So I've seen the film, like, and I watched it, and I'll watch it again when it comes out on the 15th. But
yeah. That screening was so good. That was.
Yeah, I remember going out and getting pissed after it as well. But I remember, like, watching it, and again, like, I knew you guys put a lot of work into it, but I'll put cards on the table. I didn't know what exactly to expect when we all sat down, and genuinely, I can say this, not because David is a friend, without any fear or bias there, that I could tell you, the people listening to this who might be thinking about, should I watch this film when it comes out on the 15th, it's funny as fuck. This is a really funny movie. You guys, very beautifully, from what I've heard about you guys talking about the film, just here and there, so beautifully take basically everything that was kind of made Andy Mitchell want to be a wrestler, kind of a struggle or everything, and beautifully turn it into a really good narrative for 10 Reasons Not to Make a Movie. Like, literally, there's one scene, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's one scene where there's two people doing a bit to camera, and there's a bit in that literally two scenes later, I'm still at the back of the screen room still giggling to myself because I'm still laughing at it from a couple of scenes ago.
What scene is it? Like, spoil it, you know, I mean, get people.
I think you talk to two of one of the characters, like mum and dad at one point, and the dad's just ranting and raving about them, the guy being an arsehole when he was younger.
Oh, and my just, God, yeah.
And he throws a line out, which I won't spoil for you. But I'm fucking giggling myself like two scenes later about that.
Let me tell you this, right? So that man is not an actor. His name is Peter White, and he's a Glasgow taxi driver. Now, he is my friend Amy's dad. And I remember at a party, it was Amy's birthday or something like that. We're talking about the movie, and he was like, oh, I'd love a role. And I just said to him, like, drunk, yeah, I'll get you a role, Peter. I'll get you a role. And then the day came, I was like, right, okay, this is the part he should play. I'll get him in, call him. So that role was written for Peter. And it was originally meant to be someone else who played the female part in the scene, but they pulled out. So it was my mum who was just called in to play the other part. And that's really the vibe of the movie. But honest to God, I wish that I could show the bloopers from that scene as well. Because they are fucking hilarious. Peter just, it was, you know that, the buttery, flaky crust, like, video? Mm-hmm. You see, it became like that at a point. And mm-hmm. I was, like, crying, like, with laughter, like, behind the mm-hmm. camera, like, couldn't keep it together. But no, such a good scene. If you ever get Pedro as your taxi driver in Glasgow, you know, you can quote that line to him when you get to hear it in the movie.
I mean, directors like fucking James Gunn and all that get pelted for putting their pals and putting family members in movies. Fucking, I think just about everybody you have come across or came across at that point or you vaguely knew in that four or five years is in this fucking movie.
Yeah, again, you need to make the most of what you have, you know what I mean? And that's one thing I'll always be proud of myself for being enterprising, you know? We didn't have a lot to make this movie off of, apart from the wits in my complete lack of shame to be able to ask so much of people for free, you know what I mean? That is what got it made. Like, even your brother Ross has a fucking speaking role in the movie, and that came from, he was in an all-night bender like in Shinnin or something like that the night before, and just came round to my house after to shoot a scene and then bugger back off home, you know what I mean?
That was the thing during the wrestling scene day, because he'd already shot that, and you know, he was taking the piss all day because, like, oh, so you are just extras. I'm a proper actor. I've got a speaking part in this, do you know? And he was just playing it off and taking the piss.
Yeah. And stuff like that. I don't even know if his character has a name or if he's just Stick's brother. Like,
I forgot about it. Like, quite a fair bit of, like, Andy Mitchell, like, the film is also in this, because this is a mark for me to talk about why Andy Mitchell didn't work. Like, the film that you were trying to make didn't work. But a fair bit of the scenes are still in there, kind of, and Phil, and it's good the way you kind of jump between the two. So I wasn't sure how much of the stuff from Andy Mitchell was going to be there. So I almost forgot that Ross's. I almost forgot that Ross's part was even in this. So it was a bit of a surprise because Ross wasn't even at the bloody screen. So I'm watching the screen and I went, "Oh fucking, I forgot he had a speaking bit in this."
We used everything we'd shot apart from one scene, and it was meant to be Michael's character had a boyfriend. Keir's character Michael had a boyfriend, And we'd shot a scene with a boyfriend that was kind of, in the original script, meant to give more context to Michael being sort of a bit pretentious, like, in the original movie, wanted to play him off of, well, he knows sort of better. It's kind of undermining Joe's character, Clive a bit. But because the scenes of the original script were meant to shoot that around, who didn't end up getting shot, we had to cut Alan Offieno, a great actor. Like one of the irony of it is, I had to cut one of my actual fucking actors out of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, go figure, you know? So, because we were meant to shoot a scene where they all went to a party at Clive's flat one night and got drunk and played beer pong and had like all these sort of like deep, meaningful chats in there. And yeah, unfortunately, that didn't make it to the table. But in terms of what you're saying about crafting and going between the original movie and the sort of like mockumentary style of the movies failed, that took like months and months and months to craft that. And me and Brian, who's the editor and producer, didn't think at a point we were going to be able to crack it. But eventually, you know, I think we did. And hopefully it's led to something that's pretty funny to watch.
Yeah. Now, looking at this film, and obviously a lot of people on this aren't actors, and there are some people that are and there are some people that aren't actually actors. Yeah. Who are the people, the non-actors in this, now this guy came here, who are the non-actors that was kind of surprised you in terms of like how, because I don't want to like slag anybody for their ability, but like who surprised you in terms of like how quickly like they maybe they remembered lines or how they delivered like the bits that they were doing?
I knew Jack Higgins is my best friend in the world, right? And I knew that he would do well, but I didn't account for just how funny he would be as Sticks. If the original movie was still to stand, he would have, and I think he does steal the show at points anyway, but some of his like stupid lines and his delivery of that sort of cluelessness, like really, really fucking work. And he did a really, really good job of that. I think everyone brings, even from like the bit parts in the movie, brings like such a different energy to it. Like they go to this one flat at one point, and it's a guy called Tom who is the music man, he's known as, like he's meant to write Ad Libitum's theme. And he shows up, he answers the door just in a house coat and like a closeness to what's going on. And that's Cameron Robertson, who's the lead singer of Majesty Pam, who is the boyfriend of my dear cousin Amy, who got asked to do that role 5 hours before we shot because someone else pulled out. And even at that, came in 5 hours, he just, that cluelessness helped to him deliver a performance that really fit with the moment. Like someone who was, like the circus had just pulled up to this random guy's house, you know what I mean? And he was just sort of flabbergasted by it because that's basically what happened. But if I had to pick one, even though Andy, Joe, Keir, everyone was great, I think Jack really was the highlight of the actual film for me, like the Andy Mitchell bits. And I think Nikki and Keir really shine through in like the interview bits, like of the filmmaking of the movie. Because like Keir can do both, right? But Nikki is not an actor. And I classed him in a role that was stoic and moody because that's how he can be at times, right? But the way he was just like so comfortable, like in that chair, like just talking about the experience of making the movie, like it just gets it because he's so likable in those moments. So that's who I would give credit to, I think.
And this may seem like a compliment and an insult at the same time.
Yeah.
But given my past experience with you, the way you always up for a laugh in terms of, you know, exaggerating things in terms of the podcast on ASSR and everything, when you see this role, which is basically you as a version of yourself, blaming everyone else for the failure of Andy Mitchell except for yourself, where everyone else seems to think the blame lies, I feel like this is a part you were born to play, if I'm honest with you.
Well, that's why I knew. I knew that I could do it. 100% knew that I could play the part. And I think what helped me and what informed me was I was present for the shooting of everyone else's interview first, right? We got to shoot Jack and Keir together, then Nikki came in and Andy shot his stuff. So I got to see what they were saying and write it all down, know what I was sort of responding to and where my stuff would go. So I really had that benefit of it. And it was a part I was born to play, because it's the sort of villain that I grew up loving, like that just like egotistical, antagonistic, just bad guy who does not see anything wrong with himself, like butter wouldn't melt. And I loved playing, it's weird to say I love playing that character because it is me, like it's meant to be me, but they say the best wrestling characters are yourself dialed up to 11. That's essentially what this was in this movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally get what you said. There's a couple of people involved in the film I want to briefly talk about. Can we talk about American Joe for a second? Because I think, and both in the film and in real life, around the time of the pandemic, right before the pandemic, he was involved in this, and then he buggers off back to America.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of that almost leads to this film, like, not being made. And you even tease that he's dead in the film, and then say, no, he's actually dead to me. Sorry for a spoiler, but in the screening, you left that, I didn't hear anything about Joe since he went back to America. So you lingered on that RIP bit for far too long until you put the, he's not dead, he's just dead to us. Because it went from people laughing to a bit of an uncomfortableness, then you say, dead to me, and then everyone laughs again.
It's intentional, and I think that moment worked so well. Like, I wish this was in more cinemas and I could go to every screening at that moment to hear what they were saying with that. Because I remember, and listen, it's very exaggerated in the film, but obviously Joe leaving for America, and I've told this story before, right? I ran a FIFA night. It was the first one I did, right? For charity. And Joe came to it and he was like, man, this is such a good night, such a good cause. I'm so happy for you, David. And I was like, thanks, Joe. And he's like, yeah. I'm going away for a while. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what? And then he was like, going back to America. He was going to work in an American TV show, I think it was HBO at the time. And I was like, okay, maybe we could shoot your scenes before you go. When are you leaving? And he turns to me and says, tomorrow morning. Like, so that's really what, you see, it contributed to the original movie not happening. That was the key turning point. But I'll say this about Joe and his willingness. Like, he is one of the most positive people I've ever met. I count him as a really, really dear friend. He spent 2 Christmases at my house when he was here. You know, that's how close me and Joe were. And even to this day, I have all the time in the world for Joe Thomas. He's a great, great guy. But the fact of the matter is, he almost ruined the entire fucking movie, so he deserves that moment to remain in there.
This next bit, I'll circle back to that fucking that FIFA night, because that was not a good night for me. But, and we can edit this bit out if you don't want to talk about him, but talk about people pulling out of things. There's a certain wrestler who was meant to be in this film that I'm sure...
Yeah, we can't name for legal reasons. But there is a scene in the movie where we talk about how I had to play a role in the movie because a wrestler was meant to be there and pulled out that day. Out of everything in this movie that we exaggerated, that we pulled apart, that we made sort of quasi-fictional, I will say this. Everything in that sequence is 100% true and factual in what actually happened. And my biggest regret is that we need to bleep out the name, and I can't mention who it is.
I mean, I've heard him talk about this person in very negative terms off air, but yes, for legal reasons, we will keep this in, but not mention him by name. But
yeah, I can't mention them by name. It's just fucking, it was one of those ones, Scott. You've planned this for months for someone to come in, and for the song and dance to happen that happened that day, I was just like, man. This killed me. This is why people don't want to make fucking movies. That's, put that down as 10 of the reasons, you know what I mean? Days like that, yeah. Honest to God.
And the last thing I want to talk about, is, I believe when you said Rob was the same, the person who helped kind of set this whole thing up about us getting in, this film even getting on Prime in the first place. So that, how does it go from...
Yeah, so Brian's the producer of the movie. Rob was my soundy cameraman at certain points. Like, and on set was great, but Brian, I knew from high school. Yeah, in a high school, I'd organise like the talent show or something, but Brian would be the guy who got the technical stuff working, you know what I mean? So we already had that relationship, and I roped him into this circus after we didn't speak for about 3 years after high school, before I reached out, roped him into this bloody circus, Scott. And then he roped him in further. All of a sudden, we're editing the movie together. He's had a wane, like, you know what I mean? That's how long it's gone over. And how the movie got into Prime? Don't ask me, because I don't find it.
But in terms of like what you're hoping for, obviously you can finally complete the movie. That's an accomplishment in itself, given how long it's taken. You've had a screening. You've got people who have been able to come and see him. Many of them in the film are people who know people who are in the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was success. People found it very positive. You got like, there was a big standing ovation at the end of all. People were very complimentary afterwards. So what was... Did you have a goal again on something like this from that stage to a place where more people could see it?
Not for me. It wasn't for me. What I... When people say you made a feature film that you need, you know, people might roll their eyes and think, oh yeah, where can I watch it? And then for someone to complete that conversation and say, you can't watch it anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, what's that worth to people who put the time in to do it?
Yeah.
If we could get it on a platform where people can say, a recognisable platform, where people can actually point to and say, I worked in this movie, that's where it lives, I'm damn proud of it, you know, and I did this, you know, at this point in my life all these years ago. It's just a nice calling card for everyone involved. And I think back, we talked about, you know, those conversations I had with getting people on board in the Glasgow University Union, pints of beer in hand, and there were people who wrongly or rightly, right, believed in me to get this done and put their faith in me and dedicated time, their own time and work towards me. So I felt like it was owed to them to get this somewhere, for it to live, so they can always sort of look back on it and say, this is what we did. We made a feature film with no money, no budget, and we made it through sheer force of will. So in that sense, yes, I'm very happy that, you know, it's going to live somewhere people can watch it.
And there's a clip from this film, because like when you were teasing that it was going to be redone as Now Time, Reason Not to Maybe, you had the graphics for it, you had a little bit of a trailer go out for it, and you put one scene out on its own.
Yes.
And I think this is one of the better scenes of the film. I think this will be one of the most best remembered scenes of the film. And I think it's funny, again, in terms of crafting the real life things of Andy Mitchell wants to be a wrestler into this movie, in terms of what must have been on the day, one of the most frustrating days on set, turns into this film's one of his actual funniest moments. And that's the fuck off Phil Smith scene that I've discussed with Andy Mitchell on this same podcast.
Believe it or not, right, that is the reason that's the only sort of like bits from me you hear of the original movie is because it's the one time I really fucking lost my shit. Like, such a long day in that gym. Like, and I think this is like the last thing we need to shoot that day, Scott, right? Everyone's wanting to go home. And the line is, like, and the way I wanted to say it was like, fuck off Phil Smith. Like, in one sort of go, one sort of like syllable, right? And what Andy didn't understand at the time, and I was trying to get across to him, was he kept going like, fuck off Phil Smith, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, the emphasis is in the wrong place, right? So the first two, it's like fucking fine, and then all of a sudden it's like take eight and we're fucking shouting at each other, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, I'm like, fucking just say the words fuck off Phil Smith, you know, in this way. So that's very real as well, that scene. But you know, these things sort of happen, and you also got to remember that was shot like 5 years ago. You know what I mean? I'm a much more patient person now with people, especially with what I do for a living now. You know, you learn a lot of skills as you go on along the way. But when you're working with your pals, you get away with a more frank way of talking to each other. You know what I mean? Because the amount of times I was told to fuck off in that movie, you know, I would be a millionaire if I had a pound for every time.
Well, let's circle into another thing in terms of podcasting, and that's because a lot of the people that are involved that you know are also involved in another project of yours, and that's, well, it started as first team films and then it also expanded into bloody full-time football, I think it was called then, for FTTV, and then you expanded out, then further consolidated it back inwards again, and then it's just the FT podcast, so bit of a fucking roller coaster that has. Tell us a little bit about that.
It started when I was in Boston. Obviously, the love for film, and Jack and Nick here, they were constantly talking about movies, and I was like, we might as well just do this, you know, and started off, like I say, when I was in Boston recording remotely, and First Time Films was great. Came back, the other thing I love is football. A few of my pals were like, oh, football podcast be good to start, and I was like, well, make it part of what I'm doing. And we did, full-time football was great, it led to the charity events, like the FIFA event you're talking about, but eventually the people who did that podcast, like, were just too busy. And then the third podcast started out actually as First Time Thrones, Scott, on its own thing, doing its own thing. And eventually, when Game of Thrones ended, became FTTV. Now, the consolidation of it happened because for different reasons, you know, people came and went, you know, from the podcast. And I was left with a film podcast that was coming up in episode 100 and a TV podcast that, when I'm not doing the film one, I'm trying to fill content with. You know what I mean? So it just felt like, rather than trying to make separate content irregularly for two channels, if I combine them into one, the FT podcast, which is the one-stop shop for film, TV, or whatever we want to talk about, it meant that people were getting more regular content on one feed. And I'm happy we did that. It makes just for more of a cohesive offering, you know. The reason that we put it onto what was formerly the FTTV feed was because First Time Films ended after episode 100. So it felt like a very clean, if people want to go back and listen to every First Time Films episode, they can, from 1 to 100. And it's like its own little collection there that will forever remain like untouched from the hands of time, you know. I love doing it. We've got a lot of good people doing it, and it's a fun time. I don't do the podcast to make money or to try and blow anything up, you know what I mean? Like, I get to talk to pretty cool people sometimes with interviews, but the podcast is something I just do for fun because I still do enjoy, even though I enjoy making them, I enjoy talking about film and TV as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of the issue you had with, you know, what to do with it, First Time Thrones is, well, for one, you started it in the final fucking series of the show.
Well,
bad in terms of longevity and in terms of discussion, because obviously we all know everyone's opinion about that final series of Game of Thrones. And we could be here all day talking about that. But
Scott, like, that fucking podcast was some of the most fun I've ever had doing a podcast. Because for one, I wasn't hosting it, which, as you know, when you're the host, you can't really offer your opinion in the same way. You know what I mean? Like, you need to change your persona. You need to be the sort of straight man, kind of. So I got to let rip in that final season. And we had so much fun talking about that. And you can hear my optimism wane gradually as the season goes on. You go back and listen to it. I start off so positive, and then by the end I'm like, yeah, you're right, this is pitch.
I remember it was so early in the morning that I watched that, because I watched that then watched Mind the Bank 2019 immediately after. I'm sitting there watching the final episode of Game of Thrones, sitting there in my bed with a fucking bowl of Rice Krispies, just sitting there watching that early in the morning.
I love that.
If I had to have one complaint about your show, though, is that you are very inconsistent about some the audio level sometimes. And what I mean by that is your outro music, because I forget how loud the outro can be sometimes. And so I like to turn up for the podcast in my headset, because sometimes you can't hear things, especially with my headphones. And so I listen to it. In the half second between you saying bye and the theme song playing, I forget to turn my thing back down again. So the fucking In the Fields blares out and almost bursts my eardrums every fucking time.
It's such a good song, though. I do.
It's a good song.
I could fix that, but I'm not going to, because I enjoy it. I do. I am very aware of how loud it is, but I enjoy that rocking outro. I really, really do.
Oh, it's an absolute tune. But I was actually listening to an FT podcast earlier on today, believe it or not. I was listening to part two of your sitcom tournament.
God, I feel bad for you.
Yeah, I appreciated the shout-out after Fraser got knocked out. But fucking Kieran saying sorry, but I'm glad I wasn't on that show, because if there were several points across both hearts, me and Kieran would have had a falling out if I'd been on that show.
Really? So, I didn't think that Kieran would be the guy people would come for. To be honest.
well, the fact that he had an issue with Brooklyn Nine-Nine didn't help. But like, there were a point where he said sorry as well, and I'm thinking, it's too late, Kieran. It's too fucking late now. I mean, Fraser did better than when we did it. We don't do as many tournaments as we used to here on Rogue Bands. We've replaced that with a show called Rank Bank, where we rank things into like a tier-based format. Rank Bank was my idea. I had two different name ideas. It was either going to be that or tiers spelled as in a tier list, like Tears for Fears it was going to be called.
I like that. You're good at naming shows, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy with No Rogues Barred, and I mean, I could also use the No Holds Barred intro music for this. But some guys on the show used to have a podcast that they don't do anymore called Rogue Chronicles, when they used to talk with different villains, and part of me wishes I came up with that name fucking first. But anyway, we had a tournament ages ago, like, hell, I think it might have been 2019. It was because it was around the time of one of the Super Showdown shows in Saudi Arabia. And I wanted to do a sitcom tournament. It was mainly so I could take advantage of the name I came up with, which was the Sitcom Showdown. And we did eight. And for some reason, Boots Cheers against Cheers against Fraser. So the show it came out from, I put Fraser up against. And my two co-hosts really just, I think they just did it to hurt me. They put it out in the first round, the bastards.
That's spiteful. That's very spiteful. But that's why when we do the tournaments over there, regardless of what you think about it, we always give a veto, you know, to everyone on the panel. In Kwaku, you know, in the Disney one, used it to knock Lion King out in favour of Jungle Book. It was an absolute disgrace.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, if I was on that show, I'd have put my full support behind Kwaku Aji, I have to say. Not because I think one is better than the other, but I have fond memories of Jungle Book as well. Hell, I actually listed it. We did, me and my friend, being Carl Pierce, who's also part of Rogue Opinions, on our show recently, we did a top 10 favourite movie show, and I put Jungle Book, I think, number six, that's six or seven on there. And I hadn't really thought about it in a long time since I did it, and it reminded me of a story from like third or fourth year of school, where we had to do a presentation in music class, a PowerPoint presentation about the music of a particular film, and I chose the songs of the Jungle Book.
Nice. I like that. Definitely
that. Yeah, we have a veto on Rank Bank. Well, not a veto, but it's more a case of like, if it gets voted in one category, you can vote to have it moved up or down, depending on how strongly you feel about it.
Fair enough.
We did one on WWE Champions, which we had to split into two bastard parts.
Where was Ginger? I want to ask.
Well, the bottom tier got renamed several times. Like, at one point it was called Ginger, then it got renamed Big Show, and then I think it went back to being called Ginger again.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to figure out where the fuck I was going with this. While I'm here, I thought about the last tournament I think we did here. Ironically, we did a tournament of things that are new or had new in them. And try and see if you can guess which one out of these two. The final ended up being NXT 2.0 versus the New Mutants film.
Lord. I don't mind New Mutants, but NXT 2.0 was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it went to NXT 2.0, and I was fighting in the corner of NXT 2.0 in there. And the main reason I did it is Nathan, who was on, I hadn't watched wrestling in a long time, so every time it came to that in the bracket, my strategy was I would just tell him gimmicks that were born out of the 2.0 era, just to try and pique his curiosity.
Nice.
The best thing other than those two to be involved in the bracket that I can remember is New Coke was in there somewhere.
That's hilarious. Love that.
I don't know how we circle back to your show. I think what was really good about First Day Films is the whole concept of it initially was at least one person on the panel was meant to like never seen the film. And look at you, you stumbled upon Kwaku Aji, who hadn't seen quite a lot of films, so...
He worked. He was a cheat code. I could act any film mostly on the bracket. And have Kwaku talk about it. It was brilliant. And listen, right, the First Time Films evolved over a number of years. Like I said, we had people come and go, a lot of different movies, a lot of different styles, a lot of different iterations, but it's always been fun to do. And I'm watching movies all the time anyway. Like, I have an Odeon Limitless card. I will see a movie at least once a week in cinema. So it just made sense to like talk about. And it, the good thing was it gave me an excuse to watch new movies as well, which is always a good thing, you know.
Yeah. Although we and Cracker has been on this show before, and we did have a joke that for a while Cracker tried to make you feel uncomfortable because he got to host his first show, which was about Coming to America, which is Cracker's legit favourite film. But then Cracker then came back on for Boys in the Hood, and it just seemed to be a case of there was a lot of black-centric films that Cracker was appearing on. And so we just basically, I remember there was a SummerSlam night when our friend Steve Wilson was, where we all joined in with Kwaku during the old Fala Tid. So I hear you're a racist now, David.
Oh, no, Kwaku asked for these movies. Like, that's what he doesn't remember. I put the movies in the chat, said thumbs up, who wants to do what? Kwaku chose what he wanted to do, you know what I mean? And then his gripe was that he had to host them. I was like, well, you're a good host, you know what I mean? That's why you're hosting them, you know what I mean? So,
I let the facts get in the way of your good bit, you know?
Oh my god, it was just fucking frustrating. You've been that up for years.
What's the podcast's official stance on the old race? Because, you know, the podcast takes up most of my time, and at night I like to have a cup of tea.
Listen, he's still on the podcast today, shaking around after that sitcom, throwing him in the butt. You know, I'll need to see. You never know when Quacker's going to show up next and what he's going to show up for an FT podcast.
I love that Greg official in that sitcom one is that he'll vote for one option mainly because it's the one he's seen out of the two, which is his only criteria for it, which I just love that.
I was on
FT podcast once. We talked about Jaws.
Yeah,
all the things you could have me on for, you had me on for fucking Jaws.
Classic movie, Scott.
I know, but I had to say I was very disappointed because, like, I remember thinking, I don't hate Jaws. I used to hate Jaws. I thought it was overrated. Then I kind of softened on it since. But yeah. Then it was a case of like, why am I on a show about Jaws? What more is there to be said about the film fucking Jaws that hasn't been said in 40 odd years?
Listen, I always said this to people who were nervous about the podcast, because when people do a podcast for the first time, I think they always overthink it. It's not necessarily about the topic that's in front of you. It's how you make it good. It's how you make it funny, and it's how you decide to take it. Because there's some movies on first-time films, there's some things we talk about in FT podcasts that are sort of ripe for the picking. You can dissect, you can speculate, you can do all these things, right? But then if you're doing an episode on, for example, like, I'm trying to think of a good example here, like the Beavis and Butthead movie, right? There's only so much you can dissect the movie itself. Like, you can go off into stories about what the movie made you feel, or anecdotes about your own life and stuff like that. And that's my biggest, if you're starting a podcast out there, my biggest sort of piece of advice I'll give to you is don't make it too rigid. Never be too rigid about things, and always allow for people to come in and let their own personality sort of dictate it. Nicky Buchanan's been on First Time Films since 2018. I don't think I've kept him on topic for an entire episode in all that time. And sometimes it makes for the best parts of the episode. So always be open to that. And that's why, you know, you could have talked about swimming on the Jaws episode.
Oh, I did legit hate swimming in the ocean, and I still don't like it. Not because of Jaws, but when I was younger, it was maybe because of Jaws. I just didn't like feeling anything. Even if it was a tiny fish, I felt like, no, I felt something on my foot. I don't want to be in here.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't think people should fuck with the ocean, Scott. We agree on that.
Billy Connolly even said, like, they don't want us there. Billy Connolly summed up years ago. It's like, oh, yeah. A shark attack. She's like, oh, you're in its fucking bit.
You're damn right. You're not wrong.
Oh, in terms of play, we may not have done a lot on the FT side of things, but on the ASSR side of things, you and I are very well acquainted, let's just say that.
Yes.
Because partly this started while you were in Boston, but randomly we decided to split members of the panel up into two different factions, and one of them included you, me, Ross, and Nathan, who I don't think half the time knew he was in it. In a group called Roscoe, we had a separate group chat for it and everything.
That was great.
And then you had to ruin it all.
That was a lot of fun. Like, we had our own version of the money in the bank briefcase, the spare change in the tin, And I came back from Boston, and the opportunity was there. You were champion. We're doing the same show. And I said to myself, I'll leave this for a while. This is something that can last, you know, like someone who holds a briefcase for a long time. But the moment was just too good. You know what I mean? I brought Schluer, I bought sweets for just the two of us, and it was a bunch of fun. And if there's anything I love, it's those villainous moments, you know? It's just those moments that you get to sort of be that bastard character. And it was a lot of fun to do it that day. And thank God I won that cash-in, because yeah, can you imagine I'd lost it in the fucking dud that would have been? You know what I mean? I had to win it. I took a big gamble and it paid off.
I know. I mean, I've been guest on twice. Yours still isn't the worst one, but it did hurt very emotional. Because literally, funny story, that day, our friend Stephen got me some work experience. I was working alongside him that day.
Yeah.
And he gave me a lift to the studio where we were recording in Cali. And I went downstairs to the vending machine and bought a fucking packet of sweeties, again, for us to share so we could laugh it up on the show, you know, yeah. Have a good laugh. All the while, Stephen's got a message of you saying that you're Daily Cash-in. So I got that. I said, oh, these are for me and Daily Camel. He sat across from me, the bastard, knowing what was going to happen. And really, it's my own fault. It was a bit like Kofi Kingston pay-per-view matches, and I well undershot it.
But this is why I don't get why CM Punk gets so upset, right? Because we do stuff like that to each other, right? We had the draft where you take people I wanted and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Me and you had a great movie trivia match as well on Quiz Showdown. But we never got upset with each other because we knew it was for the camera and we knew it was for the show. So I see fucking CM Punk, who's on millions a year, and Jack Perry talks about, oh, it's real glass, and all of a sudden he loses his fucking mind, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I really don't get it at all.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. I remember you sitting down with that bottle of Schluer, like, see, real Schluer. Go crack real me, Schluer. I remember. Hashtag real
pipe Dave.
Like, that's the hashtag for the show. Hashtag real Schluer.
I loved that was my gimmick. It's like ESSR, if anything, has let me live a sort of dream of having a wrestling character. Like, I became the Chris Jericho of ESSR.
You became what you basically refer to yourself as, the goat, Dear Cow, or just goat half the time. The points were like, that's basically how we said everybody from the other Dave that was on the show. So he preferred to be called Dave. So we just called you Go just offhandedly.
Yeah.
And then also on FT, you're called Truff, which I'd like to explain. You'd explain where that came from, because you got David, you got Truff, you got Go. Fucking, you're not Terry Funk, you're fucking Mick Foley, because you retire all the time and you got three personas.
So many gimmicks, yeah. Well, Truff used to come. I played football when I was wee. I was like a beast, you know what I mean? So I could do the truffle shuffle. So it was actually Truffles at first that someone called me. And then as I slummed out, the letters went off, you know what I mean? And no one really knew the origin of it for years. So people would like ask this question to each other and it'd be so many different answers. Like someone would say, oh, he brought a truffle into like school once and he's packed lunch. And then people would say, oh, it's because he's hard on the outside but soft in the inside. Like, things like that, you know what I mean? So the origin of it was, like, so fucking fun. Like, because no one knew for a long time. But to this day, all my pals still call me Truff. Like, and that's where it comes. And then, you know, when I grow up, that's what I'm known as. But there was one pal, just at his wedding, Matty Sutherland, who hated it because he thought I gave myself that name. Like, because of all the reasons that were going around, he was like, oh, he's giving himself a nickname, can't do that. So to this day, he calls me Disco. Like, that's what he calls me. Like, you know what I mean? And just because he was like, he didn't like the idea of someone giving themselves the nickname, which I didn't do, but he thought I'd done. So a lot that's come from that. But yeah, Truff is something that will stick with me and my friend group to the day I die, I believe.
And so on ESSR, again, you did one of your many retirements. Then you come back because we started doing all this additional content for a Patreon that I don't want to talk about right now.
Stephen, if I take another dig at the Patreon, Stephen will come to my house and batter me. So don't make me do it.
And so we'd been doing a fantasy wrestling draft where you pick a team and you get points based on how well that team does. We're about to start the third season of it. And so one of the ideas became, I don't know why he chose us two, of all people, but it worked out for the best, turned to be the best choices.
I chose you. He didn't choose fucking anything. I pitched this show to Stephen, right? And I said, I want to do this show. I want to do it as a two-hander. and I want to do it with Scott. That's basically how the conversation went.
I'll be honest, I didn't know that. I just got told all the shows happening. You know, do you want to do it? It's going to be you and Dave. Or yeah. I vaguely remember, mind you, it was in 2019, so I don't fucking remember. I'm pretty sure I did 3 shows in one day that the first day we recorded and did our selection. I think I recorded something in the early evening. I don't know what it was. Then another show that I'm still doing to this day is Circle East Meets West. Me and Grant did the first episode of that. And we're finishing up as the selection for that third season was starting. So people were moaning at me like, Scott, how do you make your pick? I'm fucking recording right now. I'm fucking sending in all kits.
Did you win? No, you didn't, because we started at the start of the third season. So when did you win your first one?
It would have been the fourth one. So
yeah,
the one following that one. Because so then we did the selection, and then like at 11 o'clock at night, you and I are recording this show.
Yeah.
Talking about our picks. I've literally just happened. It was on a Saturday, so we called it Saturday Draft Live, even though we're never actually live, except for once or twice where we did like a stream on like the social media platforms and stuff like that for the selection shows. So yeah, we did season 3, which I came close. I think I may have came close to winning.
Yeah.
And then you'd already won the first season, and then, but there was no virtual proof of that. There was no one doing a podcast about it, so did it even happen? And then, and then the fourth season happened, and then we talked about this. We did a selection show in the Galley Studios. I think it's hot when there's like 3 or 4 people where it was on a usual lineup. There was nearly fucking 10 people in that.
Yeah,
that fucking studio. And what was weird is that for most of us, it was the last time most of us were in the room together before the bloody pandemic started, which is weird.
Yeah.
Which we didn't know about that at the time. But we're all crammed in there. And we'd made a deal, like, because like Keith Lee had been a big pick for me the season before. And you would say, well, I'm not going to take Keith Lee if you don't take like Miz and Morrison. And I went, aye, good deal. And I didn't think of it at the time. I think I even thought of it the day of the show. Where I thought, I don't even want Keith Lee. I mean, I'm picking before him. I might just take Miz and Morrison. Yeah, I knew that we were going to win the SmackDown titles, and so I did it. And the moment that happened, I didn't really have a justification other than I thought it'd be funny. And then I thought of it in the moment, like, oh yeah, I never got revenge for him cashing in on me. So there you go. There's my motivation.
It was a good moment. It led to a good moment. It has to be said.
And I almost ruined it by not wearing a belt that day. You could almost see my arse as I went down, knelt down to write the thing on the board. Oh, that was... But then, so, the eliminations you were having, Shayna Baszler was like my first round pick. Mm. This is leading to Mania 36. So, elimination chamber happens. Miz and Morrison win the chamber. They get 2 eliminations in the process. You got points for elimination and a elimination chamber in this draft. So that happens. And then Shayna Baszler ran the fucking table out of everyone in the chamber, which I knew she was going to win. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So come the next day when the points have been tallied, there's like a fucking 40-odd point gap almost between me and everyone else. And we're like, and it closed significantly by the time we got to Mania because fucking Shayna, the silly bastard, lost. Mind you, Miz and Morrison still won, which was good, but still, it wasn't as clear as I thought it was going to be.
It was a good time. And listen, I love playing the draft to this day. That's why I stick around somewhat in the SSR because in the current season I'm winning. So I'm pretty happy with that. So it'll be good. I'll be playing that draft to the day I die. I would love, I think the next evolution of the draft would be to get like guests to play in the draft who are like somewhat known in the wrestling scene. Like I would love for that to be a thing. Like if you got like a Tom Campbell or something like that, you know, or a Simon Miller. And interested in playing the draft, I think that would be a lot of fun.
That'd be cool. So yeah, we're both multiple time winners at this stage. You went away, then came back, and then I went away, you came back, and we did a revolving door of hosts until then you buggered off again, and then I'm now actually no longer doing SDL anymore.
Yeah,
which is funny, like because I then won season 4, won season 7, did. Okay, came close to winning a tag season alongside former guest on this show, Chris Anthony Lopez, but got scarpered at the last stage, which I blame on the fact that Carmelo Hayes lost the North American title many a weekend. But literally, I finished remember season 16 with Saturday Draft Live. The very next season, season 17, the one that just finished at SummerSlam, just gone, I then fucking won. And it was not an easy one. It was a miraculous win born out of the fact that I kind of not intentionally screwed over Chris Lopez in a trade or a transfer window. And then Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day started getting booked like the Bloodline again, and she was my captain, so I've rose up the fucking table. And I hadn't listened to STL since I left it, and for selfish reasons, I tuned back in just to hear them talk about my rise up the table.
No wonder. And that we both won the last two seasons back to back, you know what I mean? So if we can keep this run going for ourselves, that'd be pretty damn good.
I'm just happy where my mid-table position. I mean, I just don't sink towards the bottom. It seems to be a thing with a lot of people, and myself included, and that you have a season where you win, you have a really solid performance, and then you often fail spectacularly the very, very next fucking season.
It's hard to draft from last. It really is hard to draft from last. I was pushing for a while that last season there after retaining. After winning, sorry, and my chance to retain, but it gets to a point there's just no steam, you know what I mean? It's just nigh on impossible to get a dub.
So, and you become just an absolute nuisance to obviously Wilson and that the group chat that we have going for the draft. It's just every day, if he's a little bit late with the points, or then you got, you had this thing where you want to implement a death rule to the draft.
Oh, I like to wind them up. I do enjoy winding them up. A death rule was a necessary thing. It was an absolute necessary thing. The draft should not be a consideration of a wrestler this time. We shouldn't be asking the question of what happens to my points the day that we lose someone. You know what I mean? So that's basically what was behind it.
And then you sort of tried to implement it literally with every celebrity that died. You kept coming back in. And then I think that didn't even refuse it for so long. Karma came back and bit him, because you don't really get to replace somebody if your person for a reason gets released or fired from their current company, because you only do AEW and WWE for this draft. And so Steven had CM Punk on his team, and that has backfired on him.
It has backfired on him, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. God love you, Steven.
We're running this out because, geez, we've been here a lot longer than I thought we would, but I've had all the time. I've got a couple more questions. I said to you when I let you know what kind of questions I was going to be asking, I don't always write these down the way I'm going to ask them, but this one I'm going to read word for word. Truff Sings, explain. Yes.
It was to promote the movie. It was actually, it was to introduce my character of the movie. I love singing. So I was just like, I've got nothing to do during the pandemic, I might as well do this advertising ploy. So how it ended up with me sort of faking a mental breakdown and leading that channel into the advertisements of the film, that was meant to happen a lot sooner, because I thought the pandemic would end a lot sooner than it did. Lo and behold, it did not. So I had to keep trusting about for much longer than it was meant to. But listen, people have fun with it. I went to the Horseshoe Bar like a year ago, and I was outside with a pal, and this 40-year-old woman just taps me on the shoulder. I've never seen her before in my life, and she just goes to me, "Are you Truff Sings?" And that's the first time, Scott, I've ever been recognised for something ever in my days, was for Truff fucking Sings. So, listen, apparently people watched it. So...
At least we now know at least one person watched it. There we go, that's sort of confident in and of itself.
I'm at the Horseshoe Bar, you know.
I joked about your events, because before the FIFA one, you held another one. It was a Star Wars like gauntlet kind of quiz. Basically, you get people on for different rounds they get, and the low score gets eliminated each round. He keeps going to the last person. And I remember taking part in it. I think I like Star Wars. I hadn't watched any of the original six films in a long time before I did that one.
Yeah,
and so the night before and some of the morning of, I just went into the trivia section of the IMDb pages for the original six films, and then showed up and did not expect to have the Iron Man performance I had.
You did. You had such a good one. Listen, the charity events were great. Like, we ended up doing two FIFA tournaments. You were at the second one. We did two Star Wars nights, one digital and one in person. And the one thing that I love about what we did with the podcast is that we've raised thousands of pounds for different charities. And the charities we worked with were Brothers in Arms, Diabetes UK, Epilepsy UK, and of course, Children First as well, who Gary Kernan used to work with. So you had a great performance for a good cause that night, Scott, has to be said.
I'm pretty sure in both quizzes, both that one and the virtual one, it was something to do with Princess Leia that put me out in some way. And I was annoyed about the second one because throughout December, because I knew we were doing the virtual quiz in January, it gave me a proper reason to binge through Clone Wars properly and take advantage of my Disney Plus subscription. So I binged through that, watched some of the movies, watched most of Rebels that I could, and then fucking got there. Princess Leia fucked me again. And then literally the next round after I got virtually kicked out was Clone Wars, and I was to say region was being understated.
That's the roll of the dice, you know. Can't predict it.
And then fucking the FIFA one. I knew I'm not a football person. I can't play real football, let alone fucking video game football. So I was like, I'll get eliminated immediately, but I'll have a laugh. I got beat like 9-0, 9-1. 9-1, and I won because the guy who I played with clearly was taking it very seriously. It took forever picking his lineup.
Yeah,
I think I went with Barcelona because there's only a few teams I know a little bit about. Fine with the lineup. Adder Ross gave me another nod of approval. The guy took forever with his lineup and went, "Mate, you're going to win this. Just go with it. Let's get this over with." I don't even think I scored that one. That one, I think, was the guy who scored an own goal.
Yeah, I can't remember. Do you remember who it was that you were up against?
Not a clue. I mean, I enjoyed watching other people play. I got more into that than I did real football. But
The second tournament was great because you had that story of we had Andy Browning, who was a professional FIFA player at a point, was in a competition to be Arsenal's official e-football FIFA player, you know, for Arsenal. And in the other side of the bracket, we had Big Ed from Full Time Football, a good friend of mine, who is decent at FIFA, but not the best at FIFA, somehow has this Cinderella run to the final and ends up winning it. It's unbelievable. You couldn't write it. It was great.
It was a good laugh. Again, like one of the last proper gatherings I was at, I think, before the pandemic kicked off. So I was happy to have been there. Then you took your movie trivia talents elsewhere. For your brief dalliance within the movie trivia showdown.
Yeah. A great time, a weird time, and it sort of happened. I was a fan of the showdown for many, many years, and they were put out open audition, so I auditioned, and Christian loved my video, and I was in the draft, and Christian Harloff, liked my character, but a lot of the managers and I got messages from managers after the fact because I'd auditioned for many of them. They just said it was the fact that you're international and he wasn't sure if people could challenge for belts who were international. That's why I didn't get drafted. But Christian mailed me the next day and he said, "I'm starting off a new league and I want you to be like the first main event of this league called the FCL." And that's where I ended up. And look, to this day, even though my record wasn't what I wanted it to be, there are a lot of reasons why that was the way it was in the end. I made some absolutely fantastic friends from that league, friends I still talk to this day. And even Chris Anthony Lopez, who ended up your partner, Scott, on the ESSR. You know what I mean?
That man.
The way these things work. If I hadn't auditioned for the Schmodown, if I hadn't become the first main eventer of the FCL, beating Cooper Barnes, Nickelodeon actor, by the way. you would have met Chris Anthony Lopez, it's bizarre the way life works sometimes.
Find your feet for all these bloody names that David's dropping. Yes. I've had Chris Anthony Lopez on this show before as well. We talked about the showdown a little bit there. What a guy. Okay, I think. I talk to you about one thing very really. We do. I do often end these with kind of a look ahead to, the future, some things that my guests want to accomplish. So, you're going to have this film again, like we said, 15th September, Amazon Prime. What is next? I don't know what I looked at my notes for. Most of the questions are fine because I wrote them ages ago. I put down, "Would you do a musical?" I don't know why I wrote that down. Maybe because I know you like singing or whatever. So I assumed that.
I'd love to do it. Listen, I'm constantly doing different things. In my job, I'm about to become an assistant producer at the BBC studios, you know what I mean? So I've got a lot of responsibility there. But I still do love script writing. I'd still love to do my own projects. You know, a musical sounds interesting to me. I was going to start a band, Scott, at some point, you know, keep this thing enough. Like, what's next for me is a very open question, and I'm afraid I don't have a decent answer for you on that.
I don't know why I remembered this when we started recording, but I remember that it was like Stephen Wilson's 30th birthday, and you were talking to someone, and I just happened to do that thing I do at parties where I hear a conversation, and I just stand nearby people and wait for a moment to join in the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm pretty sure you were just listing projects in a dream, in an ideal world you would have liked to, you would like to direct at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few that I'd love to do. Most of them own scripts. Like, I have stories that I want to tell, and none of them involve Andy Mitchell, thankfully. But you know, we'll see what the future holds, Scott.
So, well, let's do this. Like, in an ideal scenario, money is no object. You've got carte blanche. You're gonna write the script, direct it yourself. Casting right. is no obligation. What is your ideal film project?
Rumours, a Fleetwood Mac biopic about the making of the Rumours album. That would be it.
I'm pretty sure I remembered you saying, when aforementioned birthday party conversation, you mentioned something about Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac, the Rumours biopic. Timothée Chalamet, Florence Pugh, Tom Holland, Anna Taylor-Joy probably, and someone tall to play Mike Fleetwood. There's my cast.
Someone tall. Oh, I agree with you on all of those except Timothée Chalamet.
I love Chalamet.
Can't go the man.
Love him. Celebrity crush right there.
I heard one description I heard of Timothée Chalamet is like he's considered a good actor. Why? Because he's hot.
No problem.
Oh. I watched like half of that Wonka trailer. I turned it off. Like it's just like fair enough. You want to try out your fucking Gene Wilder impression, mate? But don't make me watch a whole film about it. Oh, anyway, my prejudice against which actors aside, because it's a thing. I do like listening to your show, David, but often I often disagree with you on certain things. Like you loved Andor, and me and Carl on here have slated it relentlessly. In the last few months, I fucking despised Andor. No, I tell a lie. There were three episodes of Andor that I liked.
I think it's the best Star Wars ever, honestly.
I strongly disagree with you. But, like, and I don't even, it's not even because, oh, there's no Jedi or anything like that. No, because there's a lot of Mando that doesn't revolve around the Force, despite the fact that Grogu is a Force-sensitive character. Like, that is good. But it felt like a lot of the scenes, especially fucking Mon Mothma, my God. There are a lot of scenes with her and people just standing around talking. Well, like, our estimation was, like, it's like everything that people didn't like about the prequels, they've upped more, all that talking stuff, even though the politics actually did play an important role in the prequels. But, like, it was everything that people complained about originally. You give up more of it in a TV show, and all of a sudden everyone's saying that they love it. Like,
because I don't think...
Why is it good here?
Because it's TV. It was like a Game of Thrones show. But it was everything people love about Game of Thrones and a Star Wars show, is what I think.
There were three episodes I liked about Andor, and I think it was like episodes like 9, 10, and 11, mainly because it focused a lot on the prison stuff. Prison, Andy Serkis, I loved that.
Yeah.
But even then, as emotional as it was, like, I can't swim. But you have to think, like, mate, how the fuck did you think you were getting out of there? You think you were going to fucking levitate to shore?
Fair enough.
Also, people creaming their knickers like, oh, he was building parts for the Death Star, the thing that kills him, like, yes, it's an interesting twist, but it's hardly a, look, I'm your fucking father.
No, it was fun, though. I disagree with you on this, Scott. We're going to fall out to end this thing.
I thought I had to just get that out there in terms of, we cover Star Wars, basically anything Disney Plus related, it's covered in one way or another. Yeah. I mean, you'll be happy to know, we equally slated fucking Secret Invasion. Yeah.
That's
like,
the
so
most
much so,
negative I've ever been on the podcast, I think.
Like, so much so that in episode 6 we talked, I don't know what else we talked about, but we also talked about the fucking Flash, because it suddenly became unavailable for Carl, who doesn't watch films. Like, well, he doesn't go to see films a lot because his cinema stays is like ages away.
Yeah.
So he basically waits for like the new marathon to come in Disney Plus, then we talk about it on the show, or he waits for it to come on stream in some way. So he'd finally seen Flash. So we talked about that more than we talked about Secret Invasion, and we didn't like that either, but we had more to say about that than we did about Secret Invasion.
God, it was a dud. It was a dud, to be fair.
Olivia Colman, though, fucking national treasure. We talked about episode 4, and then we did like episodes 4 and 5 together, and we're in the end, we're like, oh, I just realised there's no Olivia Colman in episode 4, just as well we didn't talk about that on its own.
Fair
because
enough.
She was the absolute best.
Yeah, she was great.
Anyway, we got immediately sidetracked. I think that's the end of the show. David,
yes.
Well, you've talked about your various projects already, but talk about them again in your plugs. Please let people know what's going on with you.
15th of September, 10 Reasons Not to Make a Movie, free on Amazon Prime. Go and watch it. Go and enjoy it. Go follow me, David Campbell, on Instagram, Twitter, wherever you want, and you'll find out what I'm up to next in the magical world that is me.
And also, of course, you got your FD podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you can listen to David and his takes on currently talking about Ahsoka recently, and also you're going to have content about 10 Reasons Not to Make a Movie. It's already up now.
Yeah, just did a round table, and I'm going to let people review it on my feed, so that'll be fun. So, see what they say.
I used to tell people this ahead of time, but last few times I've forgotten to do it. I usually let the guests pick a song to play us out. So, sorry that I sprung this on you. So I'm going to do my plugs, and while I'm doing that, you can think of what you want to do.
I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
I'll give my plugs first. You can follow Rogue Opinions at Rogue_opinions on Twitter and on Instagram, and get me at Scott McLean 1986. Rogue Opinions is wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to the back catalogue of shows. You can listen to me and Carol and talk about the Disney Plus shows, as we mentioned, on Podding Ain't Easy. I don't have time to explain why it's called that. But the show we just covered Ahsoka Episode 3. Where when Mon Mothma showed up, I think I let the phrase, "Oh God, you're still alive," was my reaction. We have that. We have Rank Bank. We're working on an episode soon. I think we're going to do an episode on characters from Amazon's The Boys, so to tie into Amazon Prime. Other shows, they got some of the other lads will be doing their football stuff very soon. I'm sure that'll be selling to people who care about football. Nathan and Ben recently released an episode of the Naked Men podcast. It's out in your feeds now, which I'm sure you'll love to listen to. Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat at Suplex Retreat is where you get podcasts as well. You have ASAS Central, which is like a new show. They recently dropped an emergency episode the other day talking about the big news around CM Punk. That's every week there. Saturday Night Live every Saturday. East Meets West, a show I do with my good friend Grant Robbie, talking about Japanese wrestling. We're going to have an episode in a couple of weeks' time to preview an upcoming tour and talk about some recent developments in the US with New Japan Pro Wrestling. And also on its own feed and Rogue Opinions feed is the show I do with my friend Paul Brown, Scott and Paul's Rambling Podcast. We talk about Frasier, talk about wrestling. We recently did a two-part episode on SummerSlam 2004, and we're going to do something about SummerSlam 2002 very soon. And I think we're going to do some stuff in tribute to Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt when we can next get together for recording. A lot of stuff happening in the podcasting world. I've been talking for a very, very, very long time. So, David, what is your song to play us out today?
It's Flashdance, What a Feeling by Irene Cara. Enjoy it, people.
Ah, nice. 15th of September, everybody. That is when you can check it as well. Watch it, then come back and listen to this again. Or if it's already the 15th of September or past 15th of September, you listen to this. Pause this. Go watch the film. Come back, listen to the rest of this. Go back, listen to this whole interview again, then go watch the film again.
Love it.
That's your homework. Yeah, thank you for being on Rogue Opinions. Tag unit. So I expect to be on FD podcast at some point in 6 months' time.
Yes, I love it. As soon as we can sort it out.
Goodbye, everyone. In a world